Oh, hey, it's Dave Hill. That's right, Dave from before. Dave Hill from Show Business. And this week on the show, from Severance and Orange is the New Black, fellow Clevelander also, yes, Michael Chernus. From BoJack Horseman and Rick and Morty, Scott Chernoff, plus Greg Hess. It's the Novelizers. Novelizers. I'm coughing from the smoke after the explosion that we added, hopefully in post.
Don't watch your popcorn. Don't watch your milk duds. Don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance. Don't show me fist fights. Just show me words printed out under the book lights. Yeah, baby, novelize the movie. Give me sentences, paragraphs, and nothing to see. Yeah, novelize the movie. Write a book and turn it into a podcast.
Welcome to the Novelizers. I'm your host, Dave Hill, and welcome to the only podcast on Earth to team Michael Chernus up with Scott Chernoff. It's cool because their names, you know, they sound kind of similar.
Sure do. Yeah, kind of.
Probably not to them.
No.
But to us, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Let us have it. We're also the only podcast where professional, fully licensed comedy writers turn classic films into hilarious audiobooks narrated by actors and comics. All season long, we're novelizing The Dark Knight. And who do we have on the show today, Stephen?
I am so glad you asked. You pretty much said it already, but we have Michael Chernus. He's known for his work on stage and screen. You can catch him as Rickon on Severance. I love Severance. As Edward Tavener on The Patriot and in The Devil in Disguise on Peacock. Scott Chernoff, he's a writer and performer who's known for his work on BoJack Horseman and Rick and Morty and the show Conan. Maybe you've heard of it, starring Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien, the talk show host.
Yeah, pretty rich resume there.
Oh, yeah.
And then Greg Hess, he's an improviser, a founding member of the Cook County Social Club. I think that's an improv troupe.
Sure.
And he performs at the UCB Theater and co-creator of the podcast Mega.
Where are we in the story? Is the question I have written down in front of me.
I have the answer written down in front of me. Batman stops Harvey from killing Gordon's family. Phew! Batman tells Gordon that he will take the blame for Harvey's deeds so that Gotham still has a hero. And we have a hero on the Novelizers, Dave, today. Who is it?
Michael Chernus. Novelize us.
The Novelizers presents The Dark Knight, Chapter 23, Dented Justice, novelized by Scott Chernoff, narrated by Michael Chernus. The night was dark, which, to be fair, is pretty standard for that time of day, but still felt worth noting. I mean, I guess it's not standard if we're talking about, say, Alaska, land of the midnight sun, but there are no superheroes in Alaska, nor supervillains. Most of the crime there involves either land management deals gone awry, unpaid child support, or drunken sled dogs out for a good time. No, we're talking about Gotham City, the town so dark and gritty, they made a whole TV series about it that didn't even feature Batman. In fact, in the year of our Lord 2019, before the plague times, our once glorious nation boasted no fewer than 3 TV series and 1 feature film, all set in the Batman universe, but none of which actually featured Batman. Hell, one was just the origin story of Batman's butler. It's true. Alfred, the butler, got his own show. That's how dark and cool Gotham City is. But our story actually has Batman, so we better get back to it, and fast, before Harvey Dent kills a kid. Now, where were we? Right. It was a dark night. Oh, wait a second. I hear it now. Dark night. Okay. My bad. Was that on purpose? Anyway, so it was night, and let's just say not particularly bright out. Partly cloudy. Wind chill of 65 degrees. Commissioner Gordon arrived at the scene of Rachel's killing. An abandoned warehouse or construction site. It doesn't really matter which. We all know these stories always end up somewhere like that. It's the natural order of things, and it will be respected. Dent! Gordon yelled, but no one answered. So he leisurely headed up the staircase. Then, with increasing urgency, he ran headstrong into the darkness. which, by the way, would be a good subtitle for the next Batman movie, Into the Darkness, or even Batman Headstrong Into the Darkness, or is that too Spider-Verse-y? Send your opinions to novelizers@novelizers.nov. Suddenly, Gordon ran smack into a sucker punch from Harvey Dent, despite Gordon being a trained, experienced cop who knew Dent would be there lying in wait and ostensibly should have been able to handle himself in this type of situation. But Gordon was a frail man, and his mustache, which totally made his character, sadly impacted his spatial awareness. So he was easily felled, right in front of his wife and kids, which had to be pretty humiliating, considering just a couple days ago Dent was nothing but a pretty boy politician with no fighting chops whatsoever. But now Dent was Two-Face. And when you become a bad guy, you get strong. That's just how it works in Gotham. You'd know that if you watched the show about the town, but you didn't, and now it's canceled, just like the Alfred show, Lady Batman, and Harvey Dent's once promising future. "This is where they brought her, Gordon," Dent bellowed, "after your men handed her over." "Aha," Gordon replied. "See, you just said it right there. That wasn't me, that was my men. So your quarrel was with them, not me. Not Jimmy Gordon, professional good guy. Plus, the main one of my men, as you called them, was actually a woman, right? So what does that say about you? Sexist much?" "Listen, what's really important here is that now we know they weren't really my men and woman because they were all secretly working for the Joker. So I think we can chalk this whole thing up as one big, wacky misunderstanding." Dent was shamed. As a slick politician, he should have known to use gender-neutral pronouns. Nevertheless, he persisted. Because he was no longer only a slick politician. Sure, that's what he still was on the right side of his face, but on the left side, he had become pure evil. And that 50% of his face was 100% DTFSU. Down to fuck shit up. "This is where she died," the evil side of Dent's face reminded Gordon. "Right here, in this exact spot, I assume. I don't know for sure, though. This just seems like a good space for it. I'm getting big murder vibes." Gordon was annoyed. "The nerve of this guy," he told the camera during one of his many talking head confessionals, you know, like on The Office. "He's going to tell me where his girlfriend died? He wasn't even there. I mean, hello, I'm a pretty good cop. They just made me commissioner. And this is like the signature case of my career. I think I remember where what's-her-name died, duh." But he didn't say any of that to Dent. Instead, Jim simply offered, "I tried to save her." "But you didn't," Harvey retorted, making it clear that he placed the blame for the murder of the love of his life squarely at the feet of someone other than the guy who actually killed her, which is like a weird psychological thing that happens sometimes, according to this one podcast I heard about. Gordon had a lot of feeble excuses for why he couldn't save Rachel, like the fact that she blew up before he could enter the building, but Two-Face wasn't having any of it. Gun drawn, Harvey insisted, "You wouldn't dare try to justify yourself if you knew what I lost." But Gordon disagreed. "Well, actually, Harvey," he said, "I do know what you lost. Your girlfriend, your sense of self, and half your face. You should really get that looked at. The doctor offered you skin grafts, remember? And you just stormed out of the room, which was really rude and, frankly, pretty weird and kind of overdramatic. He'll rebuild your face, Harvey. He's a really good doctor. For God's sake, the man changed Rachel from Katie Holmes to Maggie Gyllenhaal like it was nothing. It's amazing what they can do nowadays. So again, you can't blame me for the face thing if you're just going to ignore the offer to fix it. But seriously, dude, you're going to leave it that way? And then whine about it? That part is your choice. The Rachel dying thing, okay, sure, let's say that's on me. But the face? All you. You own that now. And by the way, it's not too late. I talked to the doctor, his offer still stands. And before you ask, yes, it's covered by your insurance. Mostly. Not the anesthesiologist, she's out of network. You know how it is. But still, get the face surgery, Harvey. And while you're at it, maybe plump up those lips. You look super sexy, trust me. Dent wasn't listening. He was still really peeved about having to tell Rachel everything was going to be all right when he knew one of them was about to die. Which, okay, that's a legit thing to be angry about, but also, is it? Of all the horror that went down that day, that is the sole aspect Two-Face fixated on? He wasn't mad about Rachel dying so much as how it affected him. So once again, it's all about Harvey, typical narcissist. And now, Dent was hell-bent on making Jim Gordon experience the same terror he did. He had Gordon's wife and kids and vowed to kill one because his twisted sense of justice now demanded it. Also, because Joker, the actual killer, didn't have any family to threaten anyway, and let's face it, Joker could probably kick Dent's ass, so the Gordon kid would have to do. Negating any sympathy we had for him after losing his girlfriend and half his face, Dent put his gun to Gordon's young son's head. Terrorizing and possibly murdering a child, it was not a good look for Harvey. Up until this point, he still had my vote, but now I'm not sure if he deserves re-election. Then again, voting for a supervillain to be district attorney would totally own the libs. So maybe I will, just to send a message. Anyway, Gordon was desperate to save his son, so he offered up a full-throated apology, taking responsibility for Rachel's death, despite the fact that, as we've clearly established, it was not even remotely his fault. But before he could see if the tactic worked, Gordon was interrupted by the barking of police dogs.
"You brought your cops?"
Dent whined.
"No fair."
"Well, you're DA, Harvey, so doesn't that make them our cops?" Gordon retorted, blowing Dent's mind. "Put the gun down and you have nothing to fear, Harvey. Our cops are dedicated public servants, except for the vast majority of them, who turned out to be crooked and working for either the mob or the Joker, some eventually for the Penguin too, I assume. Point is, they're just here to create a perimeter." "You can throw around all the fancy math words you want," Dent snapped. "All I'm saying is that I really want to kill your beautiful blonde baby boy. Why do you have to be so aggro about it?" Suddenly, Batman spoke up. It wasn't clear how long he'd been lurking there, watching undetected. It never was. Creepy stuff.
"You don't want to hurt the boy, Harvey," Batman growled.
Oh yeah, the boy. It was easy to forget. But during the entire extended conversation, Harvey was still holding a gun to a child's forehead, while his mother and another child cowered mutely nearby. We don't really know this boy, who shall remain nameless, but we're told it's Gordon's son, so we'll go with that. He's basically a prop, albeit an adorable one. It would, of course, be horrific for Dent to shoot him, but more in a generic, "Oh, isn't that awful?" kind of way. And it was clear that Dent was less about killing the kid and more just forcing Gordon to watch him die, an idea that definitely came from the side of his face that was now a bad guy. Batman and Two-Face went back and forth, speechifying about fairness and justice, with Dent grandly proclaiming, "You thought we could be decent men in an indecent time?" thinking to himself, "Good one, Harvey, that ought to shut him up." Indeed, it was a cool-sounding phrase, but Batman was unimpressed.
"What's all this you thought?" he asked. "You're saying I was the only one who thought we could be decent men? I think we both thought that, dude. Were you like the ultimate do-gooder? I was the Dark Knight, but you were the White Knight, remember? Come on, Dent, admit it. You also thought we could be decent men in an indecent time, and then your face turned evil, proving your old face wrong. So now you want to pretend that you were anti-decency all along? Not on my watch, buddy."
This would traditionally be the point where Batman started kicking butt, but Two-Face stopped him in his bat tracks by pulling out the ultimate weapon. A coin. Not a quarter or anything, just a generic coin. Maybe it's Canadian? Did they shoot this in Canada? Or British? It's got what appears to be maybe a queen on it. Does Gotham City have its own currency? Either way, this coin is now the centerpiece of Dent's life philosophy. Some high-level thinking about how flipping a coin is the only fair way to determine whether someone lives or dies, because coins are unbiased. Tell that to Nichols with Thomas Jefferson on it. Dude owned and raped slaves. Sounds pretty biased to me. And also because, according to Dent, Gordon's mute son now had as much chance of living as Rachel did, which makes perfect sense if you ignore how the circumstances are totally different and Dent could just choose to not kill the kid if he wanted. But okay, there was a coin. And as Hank Ibsen demanded, it must be flipped. Batman tried talking some bat sense into Dent, telling him that the Joker's plan was to corrupt Harvey because, and I quote, "You were the best of us, and you still could be if you just take the doctor up on his offer to rebuild your face. Yes, I was lurking here the whole time, listening to your conversation, and Gordon's right, the procedure will be painful, but it's fully covered by your insurance, except for the anesthesiologist and a couple of the prescriptions, and of course there's the copay, but the point is you would look awesome, like yourself, but just different enough to be slightly unsettling. You'd have your pretty face back again, and then you wouldn't be half evil, and it would be so great for you, man. You could write a book and do talk shows, talk about your new lease on life. Next thing you know, boom, you're running for mayor. Probably not president, though, because of the scars from the face surgery. I disagree about doing your lips, though. I think your lips are already way sexy." Dent had heard enough. He flipped his mystery coin without calling it, so that whatever side it landed on could be interpreted however he wanted. No matter, both sides were heads, which he decided on the spot meant kill Batman. So he pulled the trigger, and Batman went down. The movie immediately came to a stop because Batman was dead and there were no sequels. The end. Wait, no, Dent wasn't done. He flipped the coin yet again, and again he got heads. Had he ever stopped to consider that maybe Canadian coins have heads on both sides? Or did he know all along it was a trick coin? Which kind of undermines his whole unbiased coin 50-50 chance spiel. Well, it was too late now, because it was finally the moment Dent had been waiting for. He was ready at last to brutally murder Jim Gordon's son. And he would have done it too if he hadn't paused first to milk the moment by telling Gordon to lie to the boy that he'd be okay, the same way Dent chose, and we can use the word chose here deliberately as a total diss on Dent, chose to lie to Rachel. And it was in that very moment of milking that Batman, who Dent should have known is basically unkillable, tackled him from the side, grunting like an animal. Let's say, like a bat, if bats grunt. But if not, then let's not. In the tussle, Dent dropped his coin, rendering himself powerless, and he fell out of the building to his death. The nameless boy also tumbled out and into the darkness. But come on. They were never really going to kill off the kid, and Batman, of course, saved him. Dangling off the ledge by one hand, the Caped Crusader held the boy in the other before passing him back up to his dad. But Batman, who earlier in our story appeared to possess superhuman acrobatic abilities, couldn't figure out how to hang on, and like an idiot, fell to the ground for his second fake-out death. Gordon rushed downstairs to find that Batman was, of course, still alive, because this is a trilogy after all, and helped him to his feet. "Thank you," a humble Gordon intoned.
"You don't have to thank me," Batman replied.
"Yes, I do," Gordon said.
"Fine," Batman snapped. "But I'm not saying you're welcome. That's for losers."
"Understood," Gordon replied with respect. "But the Joker won," Gordon lamented, bemoaning the fact that once Dent was revealed as a supervillain with a half-evil face, all the bad guys he'd prosecuted would be released and the people of Gotham would lose hope. It was then that Batman realized what he must do. Take the blame for Dent's misdeeds so that the people could maintain their hope.
"I shot those people," he said. "Shot them dead, and I liked it. It was oddly satisfying. See what I'm doing, Gordon? I'm role-playing, practicing for later. Am I being believable? Should I make the motivation like a weird sex thing, or just keep it straight murder?"
Wait, Gordon stammered. "You don't have to do this. After all, maybe people won't lose hope. I know I said they would, but I'm just throwing stuff out there. It's only one man's theory. Could easily be wrong. Just riffing here. That was totally off the top of my head. And I'm still pretty shaken up. It's been kind of a traumatic experience. So don't base this major life decision off my improv. Maybe the people won't really care." But Batman was undeterred. Once he was on his noble martyr kick, there was no stopping him. You know the type.
"You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain," Batman said.
He'd heard it earlier and knew it made him sound pretty deep and could possibly be somehow merchandised. What does that even mean?" Gordon pleaded. "Does it have to be a binary choice, dying a hero or becoming a villain? Are those the only two options? How about being a hero and then staying generally heroic? Work for Yoda?" Batman was, as usual, stoic.
"I'm whatever Gotham needs me to be," he said. "Call it in."
"Okay, call in the concept that you're whatever the city needs you to be?" Gordon asked. "Generally, I call in a crime, not a statement of personal philosophy. Or were you saying that cool thing about being what Gotham needs you to be and then changing the subject and saying I should call in the crime you just made up of killing Dent? Because I can do either, but getting on the walkie and saying Batman will be whatever Gotham needs him to be or Batman sends his best, that might seem kind of weird to dispatch. Nice, but weird. So probably you only meant the crime thing, right?" There would be no answer. Gordon turned around, and the Dark Knight was gone, like a creep in the night.
Thank you, Michael. We'll be back with way more novelizers right after this. It's probably an ad of some sort. I don't know.
Do you ever wonder how government in Cincinnati operates? Like, really operates? Sign up for WVXU's City Government 101 newsletter. You'll learn all the basics and more in a weekly email, giving you the tools you need to stay informed and get involved. Sign up at WVXU.org.
It was an ad. You were right.
Good, yeah. Because for religious reasons, I don't listen to the ads on the show.
But you should.
Well, I should. Other
Not
people
you.
Should. Yeah.
No, other people should. Other people I was talking
should.
To other
yes.
people. Yeah.
Anyway, we're back. And every week we talk to someone who actually worked on the film The Dark Knight. And this week is no exception. Let's hear that interview.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the interview portion of The Novelizers. I'm Kevin Carter here, and I am here today with Ray D. Dinkins, who was the child actor wrangler for the movie Dark Knight. Ray, how's it going today?
Doing fine. Really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. For those who don't know, for our listeners, because I know everything, but for those who don't know, for the listeners, can you explain what a child actor wrangler is?
Absolutely. A child actor wrangler basically is whenever a kid is going to set, from set, you know, anything to do with keeping those kids on schedule, in line, getting them to and from where they need to be, learning their lines, everything that goes into getting the best possible performance out of a child actor, mm-hmm. that is what a child actor wrangler does.
Okay. Now, some people who is listening to this, the listeners, they sure. may feel like everything you just said describes a parent.
Yeah.
So is there any difference between you and a parent when it comes, like, why couldn't the parent just do what you just said?
A few different reasons for that. One is, yeah, I mean, you've heard people use the term work wife. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of like a work parent, and a lot of parents don't like really want to go to set. A lot of parents who have children in acting honestly shouldn't be parents. That's, I mean, just to speak very bluntly, they're not great people. Anybody who's forcing their child into this level of maturation at the age that they, you know, it's basically the last legal vestige of a children working.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is, you know, we have to wear kid gloves, pun intended. And a lot of times we don't want the parents on set because they're driving the kids too hard. They're driving them crazy. They're driving them.
And it's interesting you say that, because at that point, the kid is probably making more money than the parents anyway.
Always.
You know what I'm saying? Always, and they're pushing the kid on there to do that. So that makes sense. Have you ever dealt with kids who you can feel like, oh man, your parents really aren't good?
Yeah, I mean, I've to be totally honest, I've had to consult a lot of kids on, you know, steering them toward basically what are the legal options available to me to legally separate from my parents and to get your finances in order, because a lot of times these kids are coming to set, they'll give me a little give me a little insight as to what's going on at home, and I'll say, well, you know, that's an example of your dad taking your hard-earned money, investing in a Jimmy John's franchise or whatnot, and then it ends up that kid doesn't have college money.
It sounds like you're also not just a work parent, you're a work therapist and lawyer.
Yeah, I'm work therapist, lawyer. I'm also, you know, investment advisor.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I'm trying to even coach these kids away from acting. I'm saying, you know, take your money and run. And I'll say, you know, get an education. Or these days I'm saying, you know, AI is going to take your job tomorrow, so you probably should learn how to fix an aircon. You know what I mean?
Yes. It seems like you're having like real life conversations with them, and they just want a Lunchable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kids hate talking about investments, and but you know, kids also hate learning lines, and they've got to do that for their job too. So and I'll be running lines with them, and sometimes I'll pepper in some advice in the middle of a scene that we're running, and they'll go, wait, that wasn't in the script. And I'm going, yeah, well, life isn't a script, is it? You're going to be faced with some curveballs in life, and that's what I'm throwing you right now.
Yeah, makes sense. Like I said, you're a real life work parent, and it shows, and it also shows that you care.
That's right. I like to think of myself as a real life, super responsible, cool stepdad.
I like that. Yeah. You're the stepdad. Yeah,
I'm the stepdad that actually is cool, that you actually want to hang out with, that's actually going to give you good advice.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Makes sense. I have to be one to say, after I heard your title and, you know, read up on it and stuff, I don't remember seeing a lot of children in that movie.
That was a bummer because actually in the original script, every single character had a child flashback montage.
Every single character.
every single character, every single speaking character.
Okay.
Had
okay.
a flashback childhood montage. And unfortunately, you know, we've seen the Batman, we've seen his backstory,
thousands
pretty much
times.
A lot. Some would say too
thousands
much.
Of times.
And so what ended up happening is I had a lot of kids on set with nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And when you got kids on set with nothing to do, it turns from child wrangling into what I'll just call animal taming. And, you know, because there's a lot of energy with nowhere to go.
So when it came to being the child wrangler, child actor wrangler, because like, when you talk about every character, I'm thinking of like when people like when the Joker went when it went back and the Joker was a kid, like, was it? Did he still wear makeup? So like was because, you know, Ledger really had to embrace Joker to be that good.
Right.
So even though they didn't film it, I was wondering the child that had to play Joker, was they as just as intense from a method acting standpoint as Heath Ledger was?
Well, here's something absolutely crazy. So I'm working with this kid. I'm really impressed by him. He never got out of the makeup. He was, you know, just working at the top of his game, knew all mm-hmm. his lines. He would, you know, come early, stay late, definitely open to my investment advice when I gave it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, you know, this kid is going to win an Oscar for this thing. Lo and behold, it was Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger is the only kid in that movie that actually he played the child version of himself and he played the adult version of himself. That's how good that guy was.
Yeah.
I don't think the
world would have been ready for that. The world wouldn't have been ready.
So that was impressive. And, you know, Heath Ledger also, both his parents still were very involved in his career at that time. So, you know, I had to deal with them too. And I was giving him a lot of advice that he ended up taking.
Because it seems like if he is going to play the child backstory, right, then during that framing, during that time period that they're shooting that, he is considered a child actor.
Right.
Which
exactly.
means now you are now. Exactly. In charge of Heath Ledger as the child actor wrangler.
Yeah. And he's so method that he is going, I am a child Joker actor.
Yeah.
And you know, between us, that was a lot to handle because, mm-hmm. you know, not only are you dealing with a kid that didn't have a great home life, you're dealing with a kid that first time he killed was when he was 8 or 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, and then to bring that energy into Crafty or whatever, you know, to the trailer, that is going to be intense for, you know, for me, for him, everybody around.
Yeah. Was it, I know you said, use the word intense. Was it scary? Like, were you worried at any point or was everything fine from that end?
You can't worry as part of my job. Worry takes a back seat. It's on my business card, and
worry takes a back seat is on your
worry
business
takes
card?
A back seat. Kid rides up front, and
cool.
that's the kind of handling I'm going to be doing because I'm going to say, you know, we can take all those cares, put them in the back. When your kid's mm-hmm. with me, they're going to be safe. They're going to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Heath Ledger, you're going to be sometimes have to be restrained and made sure that you don't actually hurt anybody until you get, you know, in front of the lens, which is what, you know, that was his job at the time.
Exactly. So, because I hear the passion in your job, right? I hear the passion, how serious you take your job.
Oh, yeah.
What got you into this field? Like what happened in your life where you say, you know what, I think this is something I can do?
Well, I was before I was in the military for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like to bring this up a whole lot, but there's a whole branch of the military that is basically what I do, except in this case, it's with animals. The military uses animals for all manner of things, including, well, you probably are aware, you know, bomb sniffing dogs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Monkeys who, you know, have to test out various craft before they're ready for humans. We have dolphins that we, you know, put cameras on their back and send them to God knows where. So I was dealing with this kind of energy early on, because as we all know, and I believe this, humans are just animals. And I believe that we're 100% a part of the animal kingdom, mm-hmm. and that, you know, consciousness and acting is not limited to us. Believe me, animals are excellent actors. So I spent a long career in the military just keeping the animals in line. And then the natural segue after my second wife left me into this.
So I know a lot of people didn't know that Dark Knight was going to be this big of a movie, right?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was an indie flick. I thought it was an indie flick I thought it was an indie flick. And that's because that's mostly the types of movies that I like to work on. Art house, indie flicks. Mm-hmm. I worked on Little Miss Sunshine. Great example. Loved working on that film. And so, you know, when I heard Dark Knight, I thought this was going to be, I had no idea it was Batman at first because I didn't even know that was his nickname. Yeah. I thought this was going to be a period piece. Mm-hmm. And, something like the Tudors. And, but lo and behold, it's not about knights. It's about a guy who, can see in the dark. And,
crazy part is like, I agree. When I heard Dark Knight, I thought it was a medieval piece, but it was led by a black man. I thought the black man was going to be, you know, saying the lead actor in this situation.
Good. Yeah.
It said Dark Knight. So, we both were bamboozled in that situation.
Right,
so.
That's right. And, you're aware once you sign on to a project, you're not going to sign off.
Exactly.
And especially me, you know, for me, this was, even though there wasn't a lot, this ended up being a ton of work because all the kids that were on set had to stay on set in case they wrote those parts back in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was working 18, 20 hour days for months on end.
Yeah.
Just trying to keep these kids, wrangled, entertained.
Yeah. So that's my question. I don't think you said it already, but if you have, I apologize, but like, do you know what happened to make them not use the kids in the movie and stuff?
You know, I think it all came down to a decision by Chris, and that's, you know, the director, mm-hmm. Chris Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to say that I had a role in this, but when I was there in Video Village, watching some of these kids, they did tape a few of the segments for the backstories, and I it might have been me, but I did say, you know, what's the deal with child acting? Can they really act, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he heard that and thought, you know what, they make money, but you know, there are a lot of things that make money doesn't necessarily mean that we need to see how you do it.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, these days we just don't have the same child actors that we used to. Think about Shirley Temple.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley Temple, one of the greatest, mm-hmm. one of the greatest talents of all time.
Yeah.
Think about every kid that was in The Little Rascals.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was great acting. But those kids, they worked them. You know, they worked them they didn't have to go to school. You know, they didn't have parents.
Yeah.
A lot of them were adopted.
Drew Barrymore, too. You know,
Drew Barrymore.
She was a child actress.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, some would argue she still is. But, you know, I do think that, you know, I didn't mean for it to be a snowball effect, but I did say, you know, what is the deal with these child actors? And I think he realized a lot of these segments you just didn't need to see. You didn't need to see Alfred as a kid. You know, you didn't need to see, you just didn't need to see any of the supporting
now characters. What would have been amazing acting is if the actor that played Alfred as a kid was Alfred as a kid.
That would have been a heck of a piece of acting. Yeah, that would have been a heck of a piece.
That would have blown minds for sure.
Yeah.
So what is life like out after Dark Knight? You know what I'm saying? Because matter of fact, I got a second, first question. Do you still claim the Dark Knight as a, you know, I was able to do this? Like, because there's really no proof of you working because it was never in the movie. So is that something you still hold proudly that you was a part of that, or?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's no proof I was in the movie, that, you know, there's nothing on the celluloid that shows my work, but definitely on IMDb, you can look me up. I've got over 300 credits on IMDb and I'll work on anything. And these days, you know, I just feel like the whole thing's going toward verticals. I'm into verticals. And so, you know, that's really the direction of the whole industry. And there's not a lot of kids acting in verticals either, even though I still call myself a child acting wrangler, but you know, yeah, most of them seem honestly kind of like softcore pornos without the nudity.
Yeah,
you know, every now and again they'll need a kid for like segment 37 of a 235 segment movie that's divided up into 30 second pieces, and I'm there.
Yeah,
I'm there.
You're there. So my thing is like, have you ever thought about during downtime, like just having a
heading to Cancun? Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, but. No, Not yet.
Oh, okay.
I was just
thinking about Cancun. I don't know why. Yeah. Just popped
it's
in,
okay. It's
pops
okay.
Pops into my head sometimes.
It's okay. I'm thinking like a brick and mortar setup where you can just watch all the child actors in one place, and like the parents would drop them off at this establishment, and you would watch the kids all the time. And
that's
you know,
a heck of an idea right there. Let's just build a brick and mortar out in the valley somewhere, drop your kid off. They can stay here from, you know, 8 a.m. to 3, 4. You know, we'll even have put some desks in there. Can teach
exactly
classes. We'll have stuff for them to climb on. And we'll even hire a few other wranglers to keep them in line. I think it's a great idea.
Exactly. Great. And like I said, just like a little nice little area for them to play around in the back.
Yep.
You'll provide lunch.
Well, yeah, we'll give them lunch.
Like that.
Well,
yeah.
we'll give some of them lunch if it's, you know, we'll have a program if they you mm-hmm. know, if they want to pay extra, or if they, you know, if they haven't quite made it as far in their career that they can afford it yet,
yes.
you know, maybe we'll have a stipend that they can get. But
yes.
I do think that, that's a great idea, honestly.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Yeah. And like I said, if you need help, you know what I'm saying, with the layout and everything like that, I've been pretty good at, you know, coming up with ideas. I can't do anything, but
okay.
I'm a great idea guy.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Hey, every good idea starts with an idea guy. And
yes, I like
and,
that.
And usually if it's an idea gal, the guy takes credit for it. Am I
mm-hmm.
right?
mm-hmm. I like that. So before we go I always ask everybody this. If there is somebody out in the world who wants to get into the field of child actor wrangling.
Sure.
What would you say to them for motivation or anything like that? What would you say to somebody that wants to do what you do?
Well, you know, I would say have a kid first and see if, you know, use the kid as an example of, can I handle this? You know, can I hang with the type of attention that this job would demand?
Yeah.
In fact,
mm-hmm.
and if you think you can, have two kids. Then you're going, hey, this is almost like being on set. You know, I got this one kid I'm trying to get to set. I got this one kid I'm trying to get to crafty mm-hmm. or into makeup and into hair. And then if it's piquing your interest, my advice would be have a third kid, because it's always the third kid that breaks you on a busy day on set.
Yes.
You know, when I had basically young Alfred, young sensei, as you know, mm-hmm. what we were calling him, and then mm-hmm. Young Heath Ledger at the same time on set,
mm-hmm.
brother, that almost broke me. And so, you know, you got to check out what it's like to have three kids. So, you know, use your family as an experiment.
Yeah. So I like the advice of basically have kids as experiments, like just test the kids, like have a kid, test it out. See if there's something you want to do or not, and then go from there.
You know, they always say work-life balance, and I think it's a great idea. If you're thinking about working, see if you can do it in life. And because you got three kids at home, you can have three kids on a set.
Not a problem. Ray, I want to thank you for joining us today. This has been very insightful, and you really opened up the world's eyes on a side that people don't really see a lot. So I want to thank you for that.
Appreciate you having me. Happy to be back anytime. And if you ever need a kid that needs a little corralling, you know who to call.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, guys, this has been The Novelizers. I'm Kevin Carter, and I'm signing out.
Thank you, Kevin. And thanks to this week's guests, Michael Chernus, Scott Chernoff, don't get confused, and Greg Hess. See you next time when we'll be featuring a chapter novelized and narrated by... Wait, what? Reading. It says it's by me, Dave Hill. Wow, how'd you get that guy, Stephen? That's a big get. Big.
I know, I pulled a few strings.
Very hard to pin down. Anyway, see you next time for what critics are already calling the best episode of the show. In my opinion. And the critics' opinion. A lot of people's opinion. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, and produced by Stephen Levinson. Hey, Stephen. With Graham Douglas, Cole Emhoff, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Dennis DiClaudio, and Rob Kuttner. Music by Cole Emhoff. Additional editing by Sunita Haberlein. Graphic design by Crystal Dennis. Theme song by Andrew Lynn. Performed by Knotts. Additional support by Elizabeth Tavares. Distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. The Novelizers is an AI-free podcast. Written, narrated, and edited, and scored entirely by human beings. Can you imagine that? The Novelizers is a work of unauthorized parody. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And please support us on Patreon. Copyright 2026, Novelizers, LLC.
Do you ever wonder how government in Cincinnati operates? Like, really operates? Sign up for WVXU's City Government 101 newsletter. You'll learn all the basics and more in a weekly email, giving you the tools you need to stay informed and get involved. Sign up at WVXU.org.